everyone, it's Chloe, and I'm so excited to share something fabulous with you, Vogue's first ever global fashion community, Vogue Club. Our members get to mingle with Vogue editors, yes, including me, and fellow fashion enthusiasts at exclusive events around the world. And that's just the start. Membership opens doors to the fashion industry, bringing you expert career advice and insider style and beauty tips. What are you waiting for? Head over to Vogue.com/membership to join, and here's a little treat. Use code TRT20 and snag 20% off your membership. That's TRT20 for 20% off your ticket to Vogue Club. Are you in?
Before we start the show, be sure to tune into Vogue World happening today.
Today!
Yes, yes, today.
September 14th.
In London, my hometown.
Yes. You can watch the live stream at Vogue.com starting at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 8 p.m. London Time, for a celebration of London theater with opera, dance, music, and of course, fashion.
And you can see Kate Moss, FK Twigs, Cara Delevingne, Stormzy, Sienna Miller, and more.
Wow.
So, yes.
Vogue.com, 3 p.m.
8 p.m. London time.
Okay, now on to today's show. This is The Run-Through. I'm Chloe Mal.
And I'm Jo Minardi. Oh my God, it's day six of Shark Week.
I know, I feel like it's like, and on the seventh day, he rested. I'm very ready for Shark Week to be complete.
Oh, it has been a long Shark Week.
Long in the tooth.
Oh, God. I didn't see that one coming.
I know. Later on in the show, we have model and activist Beth Ann Hardison talking to us all about her amazing career and her new film, Invisible Beauty, that is out in theaters today.
Yeah, you have to must go see it. It's so good. We also have Virginia Smith here with us.
Welcome, Virginia.
Our colleague, yeah. Virginia is Vogue's global head of fashion.
Virginia, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us again on the podcast. You ladies have been out much more than I have.
I know. I mean, the show, I think Virginia's probably lost count. Do you know how many shows you've been to this week?
I think about 25. I think around 25. Wow. Did some previews before, and a few appointments in between. But, you know, not terrible, definitely doable. But it's been, you know, we had some logistical challenges and some weather challenges this week that did not help things at all. I mean, we've had this beautiful weather and then every day was a monsoon. But, it is what it is.
I mean, there were very dramatic weather extremes from the monsoon to the double rainbow to the like
and to all of the weird bugs. What are the red bugs that were meant to
smash? Lantern flies.
Oh my God. At Michael Kors, this lantern fly kept on buzzing around like people on the front row, and I so distracted, I just kept looking at the bug and not the clothes, and I missed the entire collection.
Wow.
Because I hate those things. I know.
Why?
I'm afraid of bugs. This is a real phobia of mine.
But I don't think they bite. They're annoying.
Gross. I don't want it crawling over me.
Okay.
Do you?
I take a lantern fly over a rat any day.
It landed on like five people and they had no idea. And it was like close to this woman's neck. And I was just like, meh.
I think it might have ended up on Lisa Aiken because one came out of her shirt at the end of the
it
show.
They were everywhere. But it was a beautiful saying. You could
it was.
I mean, it was literally picture perfect. It was on the banks of the East River on the Brooklyn side.
I don't know if I've ever been to that actual space before, but it was really, I mean, they really lucked out on the weather. That would have been difficult had the weather not been so great. But it was also on September 11th, and you were looking at the World Trade Center from that perspective. It was quite, sort of emotional before, the show started to sort of take a moment and, have that view and have a little moment to yourself to, think about that. And then there was this incredible show. So that was a really nice location.
What was the most surprising thing that happened during Fashion Week?
Well, probably the protesters at Coach started off to being a little surprising. They seemed to be out there for quite some time before they were noticed, which was also surprising.
What was your and Anna and J-Lo's reaction? Because you guys were all sitting next to each other, right?
Well, at first I was like, since no one really, they stayed out there quite a long time and they actually seemed quite happy to be out there with them, usually is not the case. So I was like a little confused, I guess. And then you could tell, well, they were actually not supposed to be out there. So that was surprising. And
it was from PETA and they were protesting Coach's use of
leather.
Leather, I believe, yes.
So, and they just slipped in. It seemed like they were very well integrated.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
And one of them, so basically one of them was completely covered in body paint, so was naked. Because somebody thought that was a look. Somebody turned to me and was like, is that a look from the show?
And Caperni by Coach?
I think she's naked and that's body paint. And then one of J-Lo's people turned to me and said, oh, she's big on TikTok. And I was like, oh, okay. And I was like, I've never seen her.
Wow. And that was the same day as the U.S. Open protester, the Extinction Rebellion protester, glued themselves to the court. So it was a big theme of the week. The U.S. Open was so fun to look at photos of this year. Yeah. It was like Wimbledon. Everyone was dressed up. I feel like everyone who's striking and didn't have any movies to be acting in were at the
U.S.
Open.
Right. Yeah. Everybody was at the U.S. Open.
It was. I mean, obviously the U.S. Open is always during Fashion Week, and it's one of my favorite times in New York because I actually moved to New York years and years ago during this time, and I remember the U.S. Open was going on, so it gives me very fond memories on any year. But this year, I think because all the Americans were, you know, out in full force, all the American tennis players, and they were doing so well, Coco and then all the men, and it was really just felt very much a part of things when we got back in September. So it was fun. It was a great energy.
Did either of you guys go at all?
Oh, God, I was asked to at the very last minute to go to one, and I just couldn't swing it. I couldn't get out of fashion shows and get that done.
It's so hard to, have both.
And they go so late. My neighbor didn't get back until 3. He went, religiously. And actually, our colleague, Corey Seymour, went every day, I think, and to cover it. I mean, I wish I'd have seen that one with Coco.
The Coco
It just
golf.
Seemed like such a great, I'm just, a bit, I'm like, like, she's my new favorite now.
She is pretty great.
All right, so what are the highlights? What did you love?
I tell you what, I thought Proenza had a really great show, a really great,
Everyone's
amazing.
Everyone's saying that.
It's good. It was very good. And they're coming off, their fall show was also very strong. So I feel like there's a lot of momentum behind them right now. But it was super chic, really great energy. You know, to me, it was, you know, it definitely had that sort of New York in the 90s vibe that's been very prevalent this week in New York. But they were cool clothes that you just want to wear. And I think it really played to their strengths. And I was just very happy to see, you know, another strong outing from them.
It felt like a school reunion or something. And it was like, you know, they just have such an eclectic group of friends. So I like people watching at that show, and it was a good one to people watch at.
The other show, surprisingly, that had amazing energy. I think you and I spoke about this.
Philip Lim.
I
feel so terrible I missed it. I literally have to write Philip a note because I heard it was incredible, and
oh,
I feel
I'm so
silly
glad to hear
for not
that. I love his
being
stuff.
Able to
have,
make it.
You know, Philip is like, he just quietly has built a really, you know, impressive business, and he's such a nice guy. I don't think he's actually showed for the past couple of seasons.
Okay, maybe that's
so why. I went to this one, and I have to say it was quite the happening and a lot of really great crowd. And then the clothes were really, really well done, especially, you know, for that price point. And I was very, very happy for him. And then, you know, I thought Altazara had a good outing. Tory Burch, incredible show. Mm. And then did you see Advisory. Did you see that?
I missed.
Hey,
that's so great.
Cute kid named Keith Heron, who's I think he's been designing since he was 13, apparently, and he's done I think a few other shows. This is my first time to go to one, and I just thought it was really interesting. And I guess he's a big film buff, and this show was based on the sort of advent of Technicolor and the yellow and Wizard of Oz and Yellow Brick Road.
Oh, fun.
And I just thought it was so interesting to see this young man drawing from those references.
Yeah.
Those are not things that are normally especially for this younger generation that are normally in their zeitgeist. And it looked very original, very authentic to him. And it was really refreshing to see. So that was a fun one for me.
Yeah. And he dressed Chiozzi for the Mets.
He did.
He looked great. And I just was like, who's this young kid? And his pop-ups have lines around the block.
Really?
I have a pair of the UGG collab that he did. They're really good. But it was like, they went like hotcakes.
What other brands did you discover this season that you hadn't gone to a show before?
There was a new brand called Form that I went to. The designer's name is Paul Hilbers. And it was very, very, you know, very minimal, very clean. I think it's the first time he has had a show in New York. And it was really well done. And it was so funny. You know who loves it is Jose. We were talking about
right,
it.
Right, right.
He's obsessed.
Jose Crielas Unzueta, who reviews for Vogue Runway.
Yeah. I don't think of Jose like loving minimal clothes, but it was so like...
He loves it. He was like, you know... But I thought it was a really strong outing. The clothes looked beautifully made. I mean, quiet for sure, but that's sort of a nice change. You know,
you
we don't have a lot
to
of that.
You see them on because they... I have like a t-shirt of theirs and it's... The construction of it, so you just has no hanger appeal, but when you put it on, it has this like subtle draping.
So Form was a fun debut, runway debut. Anyone else, either of you guys, were excited to see either sort of come onto a bigger stage or debut? Any CVFFers that you thought did a particularly great job?
I didn't make it to his presentation, sadly, but Zankoff
it was great.
Was supposed to be really good, and Diatima were supposed to also be very good. Both fashion funders, finalists this year, both actually very knitwear focused too, oddly enough. But those two, both presentations, and were supposed to be really. I looked at the pictures well, like really good.
I'm actually wearing Zankoff today.
Okay,
I love his knits. I think that they just have a sense of joy and they're really easy to wear. And he's like expanding his range. So I was really excited to see what he would do. And then he just rose to the occasion. I think it was nerve wracking for them both because they'd never really even done a presentation before. So, and both of them were really well attended. So I saw them both and they just seemed really overwhelmed. It was really sweet. And I'm already thinking about personal orders from Diatima. There was this one tank top that was like encrusted with tiny pearls. And
that's
one
very
that
up
was
your
crystal.
Alley. Yeah.
Oh my God. I just love like a grandpa, like, you know, like tank. And with something special on it. And, like, she's got her knits are really, really pretty.
Really pretty. Did you see Paloma Spain?
I didn't, but that looked good.
That looked beautiful.
Good on Instagram.
Okay.
Spanish
really
brand.
Pretty.
And they're menswear, but sort of quite romantic menswear. So there's lots of, like, beautiful blouses and...
A black pant with feather. Do you see the black feather pant?
I miss that.
Oh, that's
I'm
very
obsessed.
Virginia Smith moment.
You need those.
I really do. If you're listening...
Paloma Spain. We need some feathered.
Okay, I want to talk about my other favorite moment, which, Chloe, you were part
Ooh.
Of, was Tiffany Haddish at Tory Burch. I mean.
Yes.
I love it so much when someone comes to a fashion show who isn't just the jaded, grumpy fashion editor and just has the best time. And Tiffany Haddish was living her best life at the front row of Tory Burch, which wasn't like a particularly raucous show. It was a pretty...
Well, I don't think it was supposed to be, but Tiffany was making it much more energetic than probably they imagined. But she was, you know, giving her own commentary, and it was so funny. It was so funny.
And it was audibly, I mean, there were bells involved, and she was very excited. She was going, this for holiday, and she was just loving the whole thing.
It was really fun because that had been a very long day, and it was an 8 p.m. show, and just as your energy was sinking, Tiffany brought it right back up. I mean, I've been in love with her since the SNL opening monologue about the McQueen dress. That was one of the funniest things ever.
Wait, we didn't talk about McQueen yet. What do you feel?
Oh,
so sad.
I feel sad.
End of an era.
Yeah.
Tell us what happened.
Well, it was just announced this week that Sarah Burton, who's been at McQueen, who for many years,
decades. She
worked under
Lee McQueen,
Is stepping down. And it just seems like really an end of an era. I remember one of the first times I think I met her was her first presentation that she was, I think, continuing on. I think Lee had started it and she was, going to continue with it. And you could just feel for her. She was dealing through such personal grief, but, you know, obviously a professional responsibility too and wanting so much to, you know, do it for him and the memory of him. And, you know, of course, then she went on to make that brand her own and do so many, you know, so many incredible, incredible shows and incredible collections. And, you know, but I'm sure good things are in her future as well as the McQueen brands. But, you know.
So she'll do this show and then.
This will be her swan song. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's just such an interesting position. So few people are in the position where they learn, you know, they're mentored by the person and then have to pick up the brand or are sort of tasked with picking up the brand. Like in that way, I mean, when you think of Virginie Viard, she had to do the same thing and it's often a woman and with huge responsibility and they both risen to the occasion, you know?
Yeah, and Virginie is at Chanel, obviously.
Yeah, under different circumstances, the new designer at Tom Ford is a similar choice because he worked under Tom for many, many, many years. It must be difficult because you're so intimate with the brand. It's not like you can be like Demna at Balenciaga right. and completely reinvent the wheel. You sort of have to like pay homage to the past and also move things forward. It's quite a tricky task.
Yeah. But she did it. She really amazingly. Did it beautifully. So, you know,
we shall see.
But, you know, she obviously. It was a good run, as they say. I feel, you know, very lucky to have been an editor during her time there. So
she's definitely editor's favorite. I feel like you've had, I mean, looks at the Met in McQueen. No,
I did wear the McQueen incredible. To the Met this year.
You look stunning. I mean,
was there diversity on the runway in body wise, racially?
I think New York's always the best at it, really, in, as far as body diversity. I hope we've moved. I mean, I do think like. Especially in New York, I feel that it's such a global, international city. You really feel that racial diversity is no longer something that we have to, I hope it's not something that we have to talk about. I don't feel it is, especially on the runway. But body diversity, I still feel that some of the shows were quite, the girls were quite thin.
I just felt everyone is thin right now.
Yeah. The body diversity, I did feel... You know, aside from a few shows and a few designers who always do that, we definitely need to improve upon that.
Yeah, for sure. In fact, Paloma wrote a really interesting story about why, well, it was as told to, we ran a story with her about why she felt it was really important for her to come back to New York Fashion Week because she took a season off. And she just felt that, like, her absence was felt and the responsibility that she sort of carries... felt heavier this season. You're headed to Milan on Monday. Are there shows that you're looking forward to or what's...
Yes. Well, I have told you, I actually love Milan. Milan used to get a bad rap for many years, but I've always loved it. But I think all eyes are going to be on Gucci and the debut of Sabito. And he was just up here... last week or
he
so.
He came to say hi, guys.
Sabato De Sarno, who's the designer for Gucci. It's his first show.
And he, what an adorable guy. I mean, really.
He charmed us.
Yeah.
He really did. He has a cute dachshund that travels with him that I was very interested
he's
in.
He's adorable.
So I'm anything with dogs, Chloe is
right.
wild for.
That's right.
I think that's going to be very exciting to see. And then... there's obviously Bottega and Prada that we're always very happy to see. And I love Milan. I'm looking forward to being there, to be honest.
Well, Virginia, we know that you have a lot going on today. So we
are
going
to go back into the closet.
Back into the closet.
I wish there was a little tunnel just to go straight through.
Exactly.
The Run Through will be back in just a moment with Beth Ann Hardison.
Get balanced or thrive trying. My name is Les, and I'm the host of Balanced Black Girl, a podcast dedicated to helping you feel your best. Join me for casual conversations about what it means to live a well-rounded life. I cover everything from how to make friends as an adult, to how to create a workout routine that works for you, to how to practice better financial wellness. Tune in for approachable conversations with wellness thought leaders and inspiring guests, as well as intimate solo chats with me for relatable advice. Follow wherever you get your podcasts and look out for new episodes every Tuesday.
Have you ever owned something that inspired you to up your game? Maybe a chef-grade range made you want to hone your cooking skills, or a high-tech tennis racket made you want to work on your backhand. I recently bought a new pair of running shoes, and that made me love hitting the pavement again. Well, when we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and a luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX, luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer.
So we are so excited for this next conversation. Beth Ann Hardison is a woman who's done it all.
She was a model in the 70s, and her most famous moment turn as a model was at the Battle of Versailles, which was this epic showdown between, I guess, the American designers of the time.
Five American designers versus five
Parisian designers.
Yeah. It was in 1973, and it was really the first time that American fashion was taken more seriously versus the European, more couture type of clothing.
Exactly.
And Beth Ann had a runway view.
She did. She did indeed. And then in the 80s, she started her own modeling agency.
And she is a major activist in the industry. She founded the Black Girls Coalition with model Iman.
I mean, without Beth Ann, I think these conversations around diversity, especially when it comes to race, would not have happened, maybe, or would have been delayed. She sort of pushed.
She really catalyzed a lot of that.
She catalyzed a lot of it.
Beth Ann, thank you so much for joining us. We've been very excited about this for quite a long time. Choma's been teasing us with the possibility of this interview, and then we...
Oh, this is nice.
We got you.
We got you.
Very nice.
Would you mind introducing yourself to our listeners?
Yes. My name is Beth Ann Hardison, and I am, at this present moment, a co-director of a wonderful film that everyone says is Invisible Beauty.
Yes. I saw the film, and I loved it. We've all watched it. You invited me.
I didn't realize until the end that you co-directed it. I sort of had a gasp moment. That's must have been so fascinating and odd. I feel like it's like Clint Eastwood directing himself.
Wow. I would have gone with more Christopher Nolan, but I think there's a little bit more my aspiration. But
well, he's not in his movies.
You never know. That was very interesting. It was good that he asked me to do that. Frederick Chang is my co-director, and he really said he would do the film only if he wants to do the film, but only if I agreed to be the co-director. Mm. And when he said it, I knew he was saying the right thing, because I've been wanting to always make film, and I was working on another documentary that eventually turned into Invisible Beauty, but wind up being my story instead of the story I was trying to tell before it was an expose on the industry.
In a way, you were able to tell the story you wanted to tell, but it just ended up being a different path to get there.
Yeah, I like that.
I remember, Beth Ann, when I first interviewed you, because I've...
When was that, Choma?
Oh, I mean, the thing is about Beth Ann is that as soon as, like, you meet her, she kind of just puts you under her wing. So I was like, it must have been 2012, maybe?
A long time.
Was that Fader?
Fader.
It was probably 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And I remember going up to Beth Ann's apartment, and I was totally in awe. Gramercy Park.
Okay.
Beautiful apartment, beautiful books, beautiful objects. Obviously, I was dying to get into a closet. We didn't get that far. Hearing the story of your life.
Yeah.
Part of it. And then watching this movie and seeing just how rich and deep, you know, your story was so amazing. And there are so many chapters of your life that I think, you know, we're never going to get a chance to revisit everything. I know everybody asks you about this, but this is one of my favorite parts of the movie, The Battle of Versailles. Watching it through your eyes, too, was incredible.
Yeah. The Battle of Versailles, or Versailles, was with five American designers and five European designers. And it was the brainstorm of Eleanor Lambert, and who don't get the credit, which will always be mine, is Francois de Laurentiis, who was a previous wife, deceased, of Oscar. They came up with this idea. She had the connections to Europe because she was a European. And Eleanor was very wise about always knowing how to promote her people. And everybody that was going to Versailles that she selected was someone she represented. And
Eleanor Lambert, for people who don't know, was sort of invented the idea of fashion publicity. Is that a fair description?
I love Where You're Going.
She was an icon. She invented the best dress list, the idea. I mean, she was sort of a mover and shaker of fashion.
Versailles was something that five designers of America, which were hers, which was Halston and Bill Blass, Oscar de la Renta, Stephen Burroughs, and Anne Klein. And then the French, it was, you know, Yves Saint Laurent, Givenchy, Marc Bohan.
Angaro and Christian Dior's Marc Bohan.
But at the end of the day, we wind up going into this thinking that it's going to be just, you know, in the beginning, a wonderful thing. But then the French press started saying months into it, you know, oh, what are they doing coming over? They're just competing against the French. It was never supposed to be a competition. Where did they get that from? And then they went on to say, they're just American designers. They just only do sportswear. How could they come up against Couturier of France? Oh, my God, give us a break. And we had to go over there. It's not like they come into your house and they're talking stuff, you know. You got to go to their house and they talk stuff.
It's an away game.
And then you go away, away game, and they have the toilet paper is not there really for the bathrooms.
Oh, no.
Oh, I'm telling you, they didn't have the food they were supposed to get us. And it's a cold place because it's the palace. They don't have, like, central heating, you know. So it was really quite a struggle. And every model who went had to have three designers who selected them. So at the very last moment, I got Oscar because I had Anne Klein. I had Stephen. So in the end of the day, it wind up being a great thing that we all wind up winning Versailles because we didn't have sets because Joe Euler thought, well, he was thinking in inches. They sent him over that the stage was in centimeters.
Oh, my God.
He gets there. The sets don't fit.
Oh, God.
We had nothing. All we had was the girls, no. As I say, the girls in the music. And the French was out of control. They thought they had the Ed Sullivan show. They thought they had a real variety situation. So theirs was a mess, and ours was neat because of fault. And when I went down that stage, because it wasn't a runway, it was on the stage in the Maria Antoinette Theater, and when they started stomping and throwing the programs in the air, even though we went on first, we knew we had them.
Wow.
And then it continued. So then it became a great thing.
Did you have any idea that you...
Well, we felt very good.
Any hope that it was going to go your way?
Yeah, we did. Once they screamed and stomped like that, Eve... Yeah, that hadn't happened before. I didn't know if they could get what we got. Because then most of the people in that audience was the royals, you know, and Europeans. So it wasn't like anyone was there to root for us and you hear the voice, you know. So if they did that, it was them rooting for us. So when they came on, it was so much of a mess. They should have had, like, maybe someone being blown out of a cannon. That's how much, you know, variety they had. They had the Crazy Horse Saloon. They had Nureyev. They had Josephine Baker. They had everybody performing. So it really was a lot where ours was very simplistic, tight.
Just to be clear, so was it that the French did not have a diverse casting? Like, how did race exactly factor into all of the Battle of Versailles?
They had a diverse casting in far as diversity, not talking racial diversity.
Right.
10 black girls on a stage like that was a lot.
Yes.
You know what I mean? When you're integrating. But it was clean, so you wouldn't get lost in the fray of all of that, what we say, stage stuff, you know, where the French, it was so much that they brought on that stage, you could barely see what was really happening. With us, it was so clean that you could see. So I think you would really notice that the models of color, you noticed them. Because they were so integrated amongst the whites and the dancers. Mm. It wasn't like it was segregated. Mm. And so for that, that's what I'm always fighting for.
Right.
Racial diversity, if we all just get along, after a while you don't even notice it. And that's exactly what's been happening recently.
Well, I was fascinated in the movie that it's pointed out that in the mid-90s there was this dramatic shift towards much more homogenous, white, very malnourished young women because the Berlin Wall had come down.
That's
and
right.
So the Eastern Bloc had opened, and there were all these beautiful, sharp-cheekboned blonde women coming in. And I never really clocked that would have shifted the way things worked.
Oh, so many things shifted that we didn't have before. We never had casting directors. We never had stylists. Designers didn't have such things. Designers were that. They didn't have outside people to come in and tell them what to do. Because that happened. That changed everything. That killed the muses. Modernism Use is a very important slogan. Eastern European Open and casting directors, not casting directors, but scouts started going in and bringing those girls forward.
Wow.
And they were proper in many ways because they were the girls who body alignment was exactly what we would draw. But what wound up happening is because these designers had hired these people to do that, they started listening to them. Mm. Unfortunately, it became a trend. It wasn't about the clothes. Linda Evangelista couldn't have gotten a job at that moment.
Mm.
It wasn't necessarily about the black girl, per se.
Right.
So the point of it is ignore that, take away the glamour, just put the girl in the clothes.
Anonymity.
That's it. Just roll them down like hangers. They're just going down the conveyor belt. You can do that one season, two, maybe up to four or five. Then after a while, it starts getting to be a trend. Then the trend starts to become permanent.
Mm.
And there we had a problem.
And how did you change that? Because I was amazed at the documentary that it's almost you single-handedly. I mean, not single-handedly, but you led this charge.
Knowing you, I think you're very direct. You've faced things head on. It was like you got the industry together to work it out as a family. It did feel like it was like a family working its issues out together. I don't know what your thinking was at the time.
I'm going to go with that.
It was like people were really getting into it.
You know, I had left the model industry in 1996, and I had gone down to Mexico again, and I started hanging out. I'm getting these calls from Naomi Campbell. Ma, you got to come back. You got to come back. Oh, Lord. And then I'd come into town for a little bit, and there's Kim Heistretter from Paper Magazine said, you know, the only reason why things are going south is because you're no longer here. Somebody needs to be the voice. And I remember the New York Times writing this article when I was leaving the industry saying, what's going to happen? Who's going to be the person to keep people conscious?
That's a lot of pressure.
It's a lot of pressure.
And you hear what I said? I said, don't put that on me. Y'all got things to do. Get on it. I really did.
Fair.
I walked and got on the plane and kept it moving.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you start to see, and I'm saying, oh, God. Because who could do it? Who could say it to them? I've been saying it for a while in different ways to different people. And it works always because they trust me, you know. And those town hall meetings were really important, I promise you.
What did that mean, a town hall meeting in this case?
It's a gathering of people that are really local community, of any community. And you just want the people to come in. And in this case, it's the people of an industry. And to gather the people who are gathering, and it fills up the room, and it was standing room only. And, you know, it was nervous because I'm getting ready to do this thing. And I had these little cards, and I was reading about what I felt were things that really were my pet peeves.
What's an example of a pet peeve?
Was where they say that we're not using black models this season. And the model agency has to tell the girl that. Or saying that black covers don't sell. Well, that could be true. That can be true at that time. But give it some time, and I bet they will. Now they do. Thank God I had people like Franco Cesani from Italian Vogue and, you know, people who want to do something more. And, you know, she made me get involved with that.
Will you explain what that was for people who don't know?
Yeah, the all-black issue was that she put, you know, girls of color on the magazine, but also in the issue was all black model editorials. Mm. And that was done by Steve and myself. Edward Enfield did one part at editorial. Franca wanted me to do another. We just to keep boosting the consistency of having the editorial blacks editorial enough to so keep seeing it. But then after a while, it just went quiet at one point, and I didn't know what else to do. It didn't go quiet. It just kept slipping back. You go three steps forward, two steps back, three steps. It kept, and then that's when I had to write the letters.
Mm. Yeah, tell us about that open letter.
I literally was writing, and I did it so naturally. It just came to me so easily.
So you wrote that in one sitting, just?
Yeah, and I sent it to Kyle Hagler and James Scully individually and said, what do you think of this? One is a casting agent and Kyle was a model agent. And they were like my backup band, you know. I could get pretty much, you know, check in with them on things. And I didn't call them together. I had to make a call to them. And I sent it to them and they said, wow, this is strong. You got to send it. And interesting enough, I sent it out and it affected immediately.
That's amazing.
Immediately.
Wow. And you named fashion brands who you felt were not using.
Well, I didn't feel.
Oh, yeah.
I
looked. Well,
we did the data. We had to really look. We had to do enough of it. And in the end of the day, yes, it's true. They were guilty.
I can't believe it's been 10 years since that open letter.
But that's what someone said to me. I was doing an interview. They said, now on the 10th anniversary of your open, I had to think about that. I said, wow. And I can deserve a tequila.
I know that's your drink of choice.
That's right. Just less.
Beth Ann, I have to say, some of my favorite parts of the movie were hearing about your childhood. Uh-huh. And I listened to a podcast that you did, and I loved that the interviewer said, you grew up in Bed-Stuy. And you said, I grew up in Bedford-Stuyvesant.
Yes.
It's different. You were a latchkey kid. You were a member of a gang.
Yeah.
But you also were a tap dancer.
Oh, well-known tap dancer. Child tap.
Wow.
Dancer. Yeah, no.
Still very good on the dance floor.
Oh, yes. We're going to do a little dancing. Bedford-Stuyvesant was something that wasn't so gentrified as it is now. We didn't even see white people. But I never needed someone to look like me to give me confidence about me. I had it in my neighborhood. It was very nice, and it was, you know, you were constant in self-reflection of what you look like culturally. So that was one thing, too. Yes, it's true. We could hang out. I was latchkey kid. That allows you the fact that your parents could work and you could still go out and have a good time after school and let yourself back in after you get home. So those things don't happen so much anymore.
I was really interested to hear about your father and your time living with your father that he would bring you in when he was hosting Elijah Muhammad and Malcolm X. And I just wonder what your memories were like, because you were, what, 12 and early teens?
My memories of him was wonderful because of the fact that he was so brilliant. He taught me so many things that stay with me.
Because your father was an imam.
Yeah, he was an imam. He was an Islamic leader.
Mm.
And so it was very interesting to me that he just had me doing so many interesting things. And he made me aware of so many things that most parents and children don't have that experience. He would have me send telegrams to the Secretary of State when the Suez Canal was in siege. He would have me, you know, to show me that we all have a voice, you know.
Wow.
He wanted to be vegetarian. Oh, my God, what a word. To be vegetarian in the late 50s is not a good idea.
No.
he had us doing it for 2 weeks. And then he just realized that it was god-awful. It was awful. Oh, he was a juicer. We had an extractor at home. We would juice.
Wow, that people early juicing.
And people would say to me, your father juiced back then? It was normal stuff he did. Oftentimes I say I'm truly my father's child when I see how I respond to people.
Mm. It was so wonderful to have you.
Thank you so much for coming.
Everybody go see the movie. It's so good.
Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, wow. Thank you for coming, Beth Ann.
You're welcome.
That's it for today's episode of The Run Through. And tomorrow on The Run Through, we have British Vogue's Edward Enninful. He'll be here to recap everything that happened at Vogue World. And, you know, we have this little pop star who's going to be spilling her guts. Get it?
Who's going to guess who it is?
It's Olivia Rodrigo.
I'm very excited. You chatted with her when I was on vacation, and I am very excited to hear about everything she had to tell you.
The Run Through of Vogue is a production of Condé Nast Entertainment.
The show is produced by Susie Lechtenberg, Chelsea Daniel, and Alex John Burns. It's engineered by Jake Loomis and Gabe Quiroga and mixed by Mike Kutchman.
See you soon.
Bye. Hey, listeners, Chloe here. If you need to stay as up to date with the latest developments and innovations in the luxury industry as I do, you need to dive into Vogue Business. It's your ticket to a global perspective on fashion and beauty, delivering exclusive insights that will give you the edge in this competitive, dynamic industry. Just visit VogueBusiness.com today and use the code RUN20 at checkout to join the Vogue Business community. That's VogueBusiness.com, promo code RUN20. Don't miss out.